Good morning. My name is Sarah Link. I'm here on behalf of Kelly Dickerson today and her convictions from the Greensville Circuit Court of 19 counts of embezzlement under 18.2-111.
Do you care to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I'd like to reserve 5 minutes, Your Honor.
5 minutes, yes, ma'am.
Thank you. This case is a sufficiency case, and with that comes the Commonwealth's burden of trying to disprove all reasonable inferences that could be drawn from the trial.
Let me ask you a question about that.
Yes, Your Honor.
It seems to me, reading your argument, both in the argument that was made in the trial court and in your brief, the argument is not that the evidence is insufficient to establish that somebody embezzled money from Piggly Wiggly. It's the criminal agent. It's whether your client did it or somebody else did
it. That is correct, Your Honor.
Isn't it a fair reading of the evidence regarding who had access to the money before it would go to the bank that it has to be one of two people?
Well, Your Honor, going back to the appendix when Ms. Daniels was called back to testify by the court, she actually testified that there were two locked bags. The Piggly Wiggly had one of the keys to the locked bag. The bank had a key to the other locked bag. Both of those bags would be deposited overnight. And per both Ms. Dickerson and Ms. Daniels' testimony, either one of them would be the ones either dropping those bags off or picking them up. However, the bank itself did have a key to one of the bags as well.
But as far as the Piggly Wiggly employees, it would have had to have been one of the two of them.
That's correct. It could have come to either one of those two employees or someone at the
bank. All right. And in fact, the argument at trial was made that Ms. Polly, the person referred to as Ms. Polly, set her up.
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right. The trial court heard testimony that Ms. Polly set her up, and it heard Ms. Polly's testimony that, no, I'm not the one who did this. She's the one who did this and credited Ms. Polly's testimony.
Yes, sir.
Why isn't that sufficient to sustain the conviction if the only issue is criminal agency and those are the two possible perpetrators?
Yes, sir. Well, the credibility of the witnesses and the defendant's testimony is taken into consideration, those reasonable inferences still need to be unproven. And in the case of Petway, there was actually an incident with a McDonald's employee that was making deposits, and these were the same way. They were deposited overnight at the bank. They'd come back and pick them up the next day. Well, in that case, the court said that the procedure alone was not enough, and the bank's policy in coming to testify about the procedure of those locked bags being dropped off and picking back up alone was not enough. You needed someone from the bank. I'm sorry.
But we have more than that.
Yes, sir.
Because we have video of what you concede are the, or at least my understanding is you concede, are in fact fraudulent returns of the baby formula. We know that because if only one bottle was sold over the time period, you can't return the same bottle 119 or 126 or whatever it was times. Now, the theory that the defense put forward at trial was that was being done at the instruction of Ms. Polly. Ms. Polly says that's not true. That's a classic question of fact that's been resolved against your client. Given the video of your client making the returns, if you don't believe making the fraudulent returns, if you don't believe she was told to do it by her manager, isn't that different than the McDonald's case?
Your Honor, that goes to, in some of the other cases, where they show not only a shortage or with the bookkeeping, and a lot of the other cases this court has held, there has been some sort of money from the bookkeeping and the internal control showing that these items or this inventory, whatever, is missing. The testimony at the trial court said that...
Well, here they don't have an exact system in terms of keeping up with their stock, but there is testimony that the court could have considered. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. And you also have to show some sort of concealment. And that's another thing the court has determined with its case rulings over the years, is that not only should there be a shortage or an overage shown, there has to be the concealment as well. And Ms. Daniels even testified with the receipts, putting them next to the register, that they were doing this for the return purposes, and that she was not always checking behind Ms. Dickerson or the other manager that may have been working to make sure these deposits, this bookkeeping, these receipts pulled from the registers were being done accurately. So I think that is a flaw in it as well. It's the combination of not having something, well, you do have the video footage. You don't have anything set in stone showing where this money is coming up missing when the procedures within the office are not being done on a day-to-day basis.
Well, then If the scheme is, I do a fraudulent return, and I'm the person taking it to the bank, so I'm the only one who knows that there is more money in the bag than there should be, and I drive it to the bank, and I pull off to the side of the road and take money out, take the money that, because of the returns, won't show up as missing, out of the bag, then unless somebody stops me on the side of the road and sees me taking the money out of the bag, there can never be an embezzlement conviction?
No, Your Honor. It would still need to be proven through the facts and showing that there is
What would I have to offer to prove, other than the videotape of the fraudulent transaction, if you conclude she's doing it, her access to the money and the money not being there?
In that situation, Your Honor, I believe what's missing is that while there was the evidence of the video footage, not all of those office video footages were shown for the entire day. We're not sure, as Ms. Daniels had stated, whether someone else was going back in checking out, who it was those following mornings as well that was picking up the deposits, or if it was always Ms. Dickerson that was going and making the deposits.
Didn't the video footage also show Ms. Dickerson writing down the dollar amount that she had just run through as a return?
Yes, Your Honor. And the testimony to that was, as Ms. Daniels and Ms. Dickerson both testified, they were writing on the sheets printed out from the computer system of the register to put it to the side to show it was for a specific type of return for those bookkeeping purposes, so when whoever was going to be the night manager and would be overlooking all of these things, they would know what the return was made for.
And if the video didn't show the return of the item that we know it has to be a fraudulent return, because, or at least the trial court could conclude, because only one bottle of the stuff had ever sold in the relevant time period, you may be in a different position. But here we have the video search. We know the person writing it down is there is a fraudulent return here, and it's only a question of whether she did it at Ms. Polly's instruction or she did it on her own.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that factual question was resolved against your client, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. And that also, with that point, with the amount of those cans of formula sold within the store, when Ms. Daniels was questioned on that work product that Mr. Harris had provided, she said she did not believe that was accurate, and that the way that they were keeping up with inventory was her physically going, looking at the shelves. The computer system, I believe it stated that it could keep up with how many were sold, but she knew what was created and what was used in court was not accurate of the entire amounts listed.
But Mr. Harris's testimony, if credited, would be sufficient to establish those facts.
It would be good for the computer system alone, but with the work product that he provided to the court as the evidence, Ms. Daniels, the one who was also keeping up with the inventory, testified that it was a low amount. It should have been more on there.
Well, but the trial court was free to reject that part of her testimony.
Yes,
correct?
Your Honor. And it takes me back again to my point that, again, Ms. Dickerson never tried to conceal this. And the case that the Commonwealth had cited of Simerson, this was a return done in that case as well. However, the defendant in that case went through incredible measures of trying to conceal. He changed the paper within the register. He could not answer the questions as to why that return was done. While there was no customer present, as in many of the videos of my client, there was no customer present as well. When they checked the register in the evening, they noticed the return, that there was no follow-up paperwork with it, and also that there was actually a shortage. So those factors were different from this case, where my client was making those notes, making sure that there were records for when whoever was working that night could go back and see, hey, these returns were done, this is what it was for. And she and Ms. Daniels both testified if there was a shortage or anything was going on, they would communicate about that to let each other know. And with the other issue, again, going back to that Petway case, when it is dropped off, both of those bags, at the bank, the Piggly Wiggly store does have a key to one of those that is in a desk drawer that anybody could access. The drawer could just be pulled out. We're unaware of who is going in the mornings to pick those bags up at all the times. There was no evidence that Ms. Dickerson directly, every single one of the incidences with the videos, was the one dropping that off. But the bank did have the other key. They would have had access to that other bag, which would have been for the deposits, which were coming from the register. The appendix, when Ms. Daniel was recalled by the court, She said that one was for the petty cash. That was the key that they had access to. And the bank had one for the deposits as well, which would be the issue of where the returns are being shown on the videos, trying to match up to where this fraudulent transactions were allegedly coming from, where is the money coming from the bookkeeping. And at this point, I would like to reserve the rest of my time.
Very well. Thank you. Ms. Fitzgerald?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Elizabeth Fitzgerald on behalf of the Commonwealth. The evidence in this case was sufficient to show that the defendant was the criminal actor who embezzled the funds from the grocery store in this case. The Commonwealth's evidence showed that she was the only person who had an opportunity to steal that money outside of the bank's, or excuse me, outside of the grocery store's video surveillance system. Harris and Daniel testified that they reviewed all the footage in the office. Neither Daniels nor anyone else had taken that footage from the office. There was no evidence that anyone else had taken money from the registers itself going in the store, and as we saw, there was video surveillance of the cashiers as they were performing their business throughout the day. The defendant, however, did have an ability to access that bank bag outside the store, outside the security cameras. As Judge Russell pointed out, could have opened that bag on the side of the road before she got to the bank. We heard testimony from Paula Daniels that you could just zip the bag closed and later thumb lock it, which means it's possible to just zip it and leave the building and take the cash out at your leisure. The trial court confronted the defendant directly with that hypothesis and heard her response there, and the trial court found that she was not credible. The trial court also heard from Polly Daniels, the manager in this case, who was the other person who on other nights had access to this money and who the defendant was trying to point the finger at, asked her if she had taken this money, and she said she didn't, and the trial court found that her testimony was credible. And the trial court is in the best position to make that credibility determination. This court's held on numerous occasions. That fact-finding, that credibility determination, is subject to extreme level of appellate deference here. And it is supported by the record in this case, moreover. I think it's significant here we do have, especially when viewed in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, evidence of concealment. If you believe the defendant that Daniels was telling her to run all these fake transactions, maybe not. However, if Dickerson, as the Commonwealth proved in this case, was the person taking that money, her return scheme was an elaborate concealment plan. She returned multiple cans of the same formula in the context of a WIC transaction, which is a government subsidy thing. She wrote the amount down on the register next to it. And then significantly in the appendix, it shows that she took those receipts with her when she left the register. At appendix page 130 and 136, the video surveillance shows her taking those receipts with her into the back. So whether or not she wrote those down by the side, certainly they were being removed from the register, and she was the person who was closing at the end of each night. She was the person who said that the register's balanced. There was consistent evidence that if that return was a fraudulent return, the registers would not have balanced. And in this case, she was the person every single night who closed those registers, who signed that they balanced, and who took the money out of the Piggly Wiggly. The Commonwealth did meet its burden in this case to establish beyond a reasonable doubt that she was the criminal actor behind these embezzlements. I would be happy to answer any direct questions from the court.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'd ask you to affirm.
Ms. Lynch.
Thank you, Your Honors. Again, what I would just like to point out, suspicion or opportunity alone is not enough. You have to, beyond a reasonable doubt, and it's on the Commonwealth's burden, to show that all other reasonable hypotheses of inference are disproved of the innocence of the defendant.
But at this point, on appeal, there's a presumption that works to the Commonwealth's benefit, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, and while that is true, the court is also to look at all of the evidence within the record and within the trial court. And again, I would like to point back out to you that it not just was just the one bag, but it's the two locked bags.
Do you agree that on the days that there is evidence in the record that on the days that that she is seen making the returns and writing down on the receipts, that the video evidence also shows her taking those receipts and that she is also the person who closed out the registers those evenings? Is there evidence from which a reasonable fact finder could reach that conclusion?
The stipulation of the office video did show, and it was proven, that she was the one counting the money in those evenings. Ms. Daniels also had testified, though, that in the mornings, if one of them was checking the registers or following up, the other may would check behind, but even though that was supposed to be the protocol, it was not always done. And again, with the concealment that the Commonwealth brought up, she was following as what she believed were the procedures. The videos, while they do show those transactions, clearly show her taking the receipts, taking the register, the tiers out of the registers, taking the long receipts that goes into detail of what the transactions are, going into the office with them. So if there were any questions, the next person on duty, while they are going back and supposed to be backtracking, could see what is going on. And with the deposit bags, again, there was the one that Piggly Wiggly had with the key in the drawer that there was access. Numerous people could have gone in there and had access to, as the testimony also was, that that office door wasn't always locked. And that there was also another individual, not just the three managers, that would actually go pick up the deposit some mornings. The bank, however, did have the second key, which was solely for the deposits that were going to be made to the bank. That bag is the one that would have had the deposits from the registers that Ms. Dickerson would have been put in. Ms. Daniels had also testified that if there were any problems with the bank, if the bag was unlocked or anything of that nature, the bank would call. However, they had a key themselves. And going back to the Petway case again.
But was there ever any indication that any of the when the bag went to the bank with a deposit slip with the amount of money that's supposed to be in it, the bank called up and said, you're short?
For that, the only thing within the record, Your Honor, is that Ms. Daniels just testified that if there was a problem, the bank would call. However, within the store, I'm sorry.
But if the bank always credited the amount of deposit they claimed, then the fact that the bank had a key doesn't matter, because nobody at the bank could have been shorting the money because they were crediting them with the money they knew was in the bag.
But with the procedures within Piggly Wiggly, Your Honor, with them not always following the protocol of their bookkeeping and going back and double-checking once those deposits are back within the store, there's really no telling whether there were other shortages or overages or whatever when that policy is not being followed within the Piggly Wiggly office. And again, the Petway case with the McDonald's issue and the deposit bags, while the procedure was taken into consideration, there was no evidence presented that the suspicion of the defendant alone was the only one who had the opportunity once it had left that store. Because the bank had a key, no evidence was presented by the Commonwealth to show that it was only the defendant. No tellers were brought in, no one from the bank who had the key. Specifically, just the procedure was brought. And because of that, and because of the concealment issue where my client did everything like she was supposed to, I would ask that these convictions would be reversed and that there's not sufficient evidence.
Very well, thank you. We'll step down and greet counsel, thereafter take up the case of Camp versus the Commonwealth.